The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Glad you're with us on this Thursday afternoon. We've got an awful lot to talk about. We are expecting to get some vote counts updated in Nevada and Arizona. While I am on the air today, those are two governor's races, Senate races, that if they both went for the Republican, that would give the Republicans control of the Senate, even without the Herschel Walker runoff down in Georgia that's going to happen in early December. So we'll give you those updated numbers. We'll tell you the very latest on the races here. I will say again, almost the entire country has all the votes counted, but in the same old places, and it was Arizona, it was Nevada, it was Pennsylvania. Those were all the problem spots 2 years ago. They remain problem spots for votes getting counted, and King County as well. We still don't have all the votes counted here in King County and in Washington State, so that we have a clear idea of where some of these close races, what direction they're going to go. But this has to get fixed. It's ridiculous, and it does throw the trust in the voting system into question when it's the exact same culprits every 2 years that cannot get votes counted the way the rest of the country does. This is not working well, the system, especially when you have such sharp partisanship in King County, when you have people like the governor and the state Democratic Party chair doing a little on-camera skit and trying to... I'm sorry, they tried to outsmart me when Tina Podlodowski came on the show a few days ago. And, hey, Tina, don't come to a fight unarmed. But they will. They'll go to any lengths to get the results that they want. And I remain just appalled by the fact that Lisa Manion is winning the King County prosecutor race. She's going to take King County in exactly the same direction where San Francisco and Los Angeles and Philadelphia have been. She has the exact same supporters as those, the people who supported the San Francisco, LA, and Philly prosecutors. Exact same supporters with the exact same message that we're not going to put even violent criminals in jail. We're going to look for other ways to punish them, but it'll be just a way to get their life back on track and keep them out on the streets. Restorative justice, it is called. But what it is the Marxism of let's flood a region with as much crime as possible. And I'm incredulous that of all the votes, I can understand why most of them went the way they did. But King County prosecutor just doesn't sound right to me. That people out in the suburbs, I know that there are a lot of, you know, blue people in Seattle, politically, not sad. But I just do not understand that the people out in the suburbs of King County want the most crime-friendly prosecutor dealing with the felony cases in our region. You know, yeah, they got Ann Davidson in Seattle City Attorney, but she doesn't handle felonies. She handles up to misdemeanors. But we're going to have the most criminal-friendly prosecutor ever dealing with felons in King County. I don't understand that. I can rationalize almost everything else, but that one is baffling to me. And that's where I say, I don't trust the way the machine has been assembled here. When Dow Constein convinces voters to give away the power of electing a sheriff, only county in the state that doesn't have an elected sheriff. So our sheriff in King County doesn't get to vote with the state sheriff's association because she's not an elected sheriff. You have to be elected to have a voting right in the sheriff's association. It's craziness. But Dow Constein, he wants to have complete control over everything. Law enforcement, he's taken control. The sheriff that we have now, Patty Cole Tindall, She cannot do anything independently. Everything she does has to go through Dow Constein. And he has been a notoriously soft on crime King County executive. He's the one who, I'm sure he'll be angling to get the subjects of our top story coming up here back out on the street as quickly as possible. But if you have thoughts on any of this, if you have thoughts, can you explain the Lisa Mannion thing to me, the King County prosecutor? Why King County decided to go in a direction that'll get felons back out, maybe with as little punishment as possible? Because that's the one I cannot understand. And that's why when I try to analyze things rationally, analytically, I analyze things analytically. Yeah, I said that. I caught it as soon as you did. That's the one that just smells to me. I just do not buy that that's what the people of King County want. Or maybe people just don't care about their vote. They don't do any research. I don't know. All right, with all that as mere prelude, let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
We had this story in our 2 o'clock hour yesterday, but we have since had an email exchange with the teacher that we invited on the show. He has declined our invitation. I'll tell you about that in just a minute. But this is really shocking to me. Very sadly, 2 days ago, there was a 17-year-old kid murdered at Ingram High School. The accused murderer is 14 years old. He declined his court appearance. He had a 15-year-old accomplice who was in court yesterday. The parents of the 15-year-old were making a case that they should just let the kid go. But why is this happening? Why does this happen? Well, according to a teacher at Ingram High School, Paul Franklin Bahari, he posted a picture on Instagram of himself with several of his students during the lockdown, right after the shooting happened. And what he said was shocking, even to me. I mean, I know the teachers think they can get away with anything, and they usually can. But how this is acceptable to Ingram High School and to the Seattle School District and to the taxpayers who pay this guy's salary is beyond me. What he posted on Instagram, this is a picture of my students and I in lockdown today. First of all, if you're a high school teacher, you should know basic grammar. A picture of my students and I. That's just learn basic English before you become a high school teacher. Is that asking too much? Okay, but now it's the rest of it that I have the big problem with. This is a picture of my students and I in lockdown today after a student with a gun shot another student multiple times in the hall about 50 yards from my classroom. That poor kid is dead. My students were amazing in this horrible situation. I did okay too. But this shouldn't have happened at all. Our unwillingness as a nation to do anything about our gun problem is maddening and psychotic. If you didn't vote blue today, F you. And he wrote all four letters in the F word. If you didn't vote blue today, F you. The only way to stop this madness is to vote progressive so that we can have a minuscule chance to change gun laws in this country. I'm in the anger stage of grief at this moment. I'm not going to argue about this. I'm done. Well, that's always a healthy way to approach issues. Lay out something insane and then say, I'm not going to talk about this because I'm right and everybody's wrong. We reached out to this teacher, Nicole did, yesterday afternoon. And Nicole, it was an interesting exchange that you had with Paul Franklin Bahari, the Ingram High School teacher.
Well, I had a feeling he may not be willing to chat, and so I thought I'd just lay it all out there and see what kind of response I got.
Yeah. And so you kind of in detail said, this is my take on it. We'd like to talk with you about this, right?
Correct.
Okay. And what was his response?
No.
That's it.
That's it.
He just wrote back N-O.
With a period.
Oh, he put a period in.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe he does know basic English. I don't know about one-word sentences. So he does not want to engage, and you don't think we can convince him to come on and talk about
it? I don't believe so.
That's
but I also emailed the school, and they are looking into it now. So they'll get back to me on how they're going to handle it.
Okay. And I want to give credit to the folks at Safe Seattle. They first broke the story of this teacher's Instagram post. But I want to run. Here's what I truly believe. That if you want to look for why there is so much hatred and violence, you need look no further than Paul Franklin Bahari's Instagram post, because he is inspiring hatred. If you don't think like me, F you, he says. I don't know if he's one of those cowards who's a big man on social media. I'm wondering if the father of one of his students was standing nose to nose with Paul Franklin Bahari, and he said, "Hey, how'd you vote today?" And the father said, "I'm conservative." I wonder if he would yell, "F you!" in the dad's face. Because I know a lot of dads that if somebody says that to them, would deck the person. And I have no idea. I'm guessing he's one of those keyboard cowards who's a big man. But what kind of a role model is this teacher for students? He is a role model of intolerance, of hatred. He is the exact opposite of what a teacher should be. And he is somebody who, like I said, he emulates the kind of hatred he decries. But beyond that, his argument makes no sense. It is an argument on the level of a four-year-old. If you didn't vote blue today, F you, because that's the only way we're going to do something about our gun problem. Let me ask you something, Paul Franklin Bahari. Every election, pretty much in my lifetime in Seattle and King County and Washington State, everybody has voted blue, which means we have the sovereignty, the party does, the Democrats do, to implement whatever gun laws they can, as long as they're constitutional. Now, maybe you don't believe in the Constitution. Maybe you say F you to the framers of the United States and the Washington State constitutions, but we still live in a constitutional republic. Now, maybe this is too advanced a concept for this high school teacher. But you can't pass laws that are unconstitutional. You can pass them, but they'll get tossed. They'll get challenged. Beyond that, so voting blue, everybody has been doing forever around here, not everybody, but the majority, and it has created a record number of murders in Washington State. We are on a record number of shootings in Seattle and King County. So your argument makes zero sense. Voting blue has caused the problem. Voting blue is one of the reasons we have kids murdering kids in places like Ingram High School. And then beyond that, name a law that could be, by the way, there are lots of laws. This 14-year-old, believe it or not, Paul Franklin Bahari, there is a law that says 14-year-olds can't have guns. There are laws that say Ingram High School is a gun-free zone. Why did those laws not stop this shooting? Well, I'll tell you why, Paul Franklin Bahari. Because criminals don't obey laws. The only people who abide by laws are the law-abiding. And so name a law that would protect the Second Amendment rights of gun owners, that would protect the constitutional rights of Washington State residents. Name a law that you can come up with that would allow people to still have their Second Amendment constitutional rights, but would remove guns from the 14-year-old that murdered a classmate at Ingram. Because the answer is there is no such law that exists. If the gun-free zone signs at Ingram High School and the 14-year-olds can't have guns law, if that didn't stop this, tell me a law that would still protect the rights of everybody who is a believer in the Second Amendment. And that's why the guy ends his Instagram post with, "I'm not going to argue about this. I'm done. As a teacher, I've been done for years on this topic. But now it's happened to me personally, and I'm raging. Guns are the problem. Period." No, thug criminals are the problem. That's the problem. Kids who have no parental oversight are the problem. Kids who get a slap on the wrist when they commit violent crimes and believe that they can get away committing any other crime until they finally commit one as an adult and are put in prison. That's the problem. Being soft on crime is the problem. Voting blue is the problem around here, because all we do is vote blue, and all we see is a gun problem that is getting worse and worse and worse. So you have a teacher who role models hatred and intolerance and violence. Because I'm telling you, you saying bleep you, expletive deleted you to someone's face, you're setting yourself up for some problems. But he doesn't do it to anybody's face. He does it behind a keyboard. And when I give him an opportunity to talk about it, because I'd love to ask him all of the questions that I've just been posing here and now for you. And Nicole, you were telling me that the Instagram post has now been deleted.
Yes, it has. There was actually two, but yep, he's taken both of them down. So
interesting. I believe that this teacher should be fired. I think that a teacher who is paid by the taxpayers, who I don't know what percentage of Ingram parents vote blue, but for the ones who don't, for a teacher to say F you, and then also, as I said, for a teacher to role model hatred and intolerance like this, that's the problem right there. When that's who kids are looking up to, somebody who says, "You disagree with me, bleep you." What a horrible role model.
You know, when you were talking yesterday about why you stay here, Dave Ross asked you that on election night, why you stay in the state if you don't like it. And you said, you know, nobody's going to chase me out. I have to say, if I had kids, though, I would want to get out, because I think it's really scary right now. And you have to find the right district. And I mean, it's tough. I would at least maybe go to the east side if I was raising kids right now. It's hard to watch.
It's tough on the east side right now. I mean, we've got so much woke ideology.
Sorry, I meant east side of the state.
Oh, east side of the state. Okay. I thought you meant Bellevue and Issaquah, because those districts, you know, like East Lake Heights, they have problems there. Yeah.
That's what would motivate me to leave, I guess, if things don't change.
One of my best friends who comes on our show every Wednesday afternoon, he, his wife, their family, they left for that reason, for that very reason, after raising their kids in the public schools for many years around here. So, it is. I doubt if I would stay here if my kids were little. And I'm glad that they became wonderful adults before all of this hatred of teachers like this guy was imposed on them. It's woke ideology, and that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We're going to check the news for you here at the bottom of the hour. And then Jonathan Cho, he has a fascinating story. Usually you don't see public feuds between high-level politicians, but the mayor of Everett and the head of the State Department of Transportation, they are in a public feud. And Jonathan Cho, he talked with the mayor about it. We have audio, and we'll talk to Jonathan next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, there's some kind of drama going on between two high-powered government agencies and officials. The mayor of Everett is accusing the State Department of Transportation of snatching up homeless people who are on DOT right-of-ways and putting them in Everett motels without consulting the community or the mayor. of Everett. And the person who has been all over this story and has some brand new audio to share with me and with you is journalist Jonathan Cho. You can see his work on Twitter at Cho Show, C-H-O-E. And he joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, Jonathan, always good to talk to you.
Hey, Dory, always ready to go, man. So much going on.
Yes, there is. All right, tell me, let's go back to the beginning of all of this. So when did Cassie Franklin first either discover or accuse the DOT of stashing homeless people in motels without talking to her or the Everett community?
Well, apparently this has been in the works now, this letter. The letter, she dropped this bombshell letter last Friday. And it was kind of, you know, put out there on social media platforms, and it kind of caused a firestorm. Not much media picking up on it, but again, of course, I put it out there, and I reached out to WashDOT immediately. They took a few days, but then WashDOT finally came back and fired their own letter, a three-page letter this time. Not only WashDOT, they also included the Washington State Department of Commerce as well as State Patrol.
Yeah.
Demanding an apology and a retraction, essentially accusing Mayor Cassie Franklin of lying.
So here's what Cassie Franklin said in her letter. She said, "Yesterday I learned the Washington State Department of Transportation is placing a large number of unsheltered population, many of which reside outside the city of Everett, in motels located throughout Everett. This is an unacceptable burden for our city to bear." Do we know, Jonathan, where Cassie Franklin got the information that the DOT was doing this?
She wouldn't say that. She specifically, at least in the letter, though, she said she got it secondhand. But her public information officer said it's not just three; it's several dozen who have been placed into these motels in Everett, alleged from outside of the city limits. And that's, again, as you said, the problem here. Mayor Cassie Franklin saying, "Hey, at the very least, if you're going to pull a move like that, you got to consult us. You got to ask permission. We got to do this collaboratively. We've got to do it together." And that's her primary beef right now.
And the DOT, in their response letter, they're saying essentially the same thing. They're saying, "Hey, you should have talked to us before you sent out your letter." The DOT's response, they said, "We are deeply frustrated that the city and county did not reach out to have a conversation with our departments prior to publishing and publicly sharing false secondhand information across social media platforms." So one of these two sides, whether it be Cassie Franklin or the state DOT, one of them is lying here. And the question is, for someone like you to figure out, is which one?
Yeah, exactly. Or best case scenario, it's some serious miscommunication and a game of telephone happening here right now. But look, I went straight to the source last night at Wednesday evening's Everett City Council meeting, and I got a one-on-one with the mayor. And the mayor was absolutely speaking with conviction and not backing down from any aspect of this letter. She is 100% doubling down and saying that essentially she has all the facts and WashDOT is wrong.
Here's one clip of Jonathan confronting Cassie Franklin, the Everett mayor, last night.
Do you still stand by that letter?
I absolutely do. And I sent a response to Roger and his team this afternoon.
Do you have proof WashDOT is moving homeless people into motels in Everett?
I do know that they have moved homeless people into Everett, and I've asked them to please stop until we have another conversation about the service plan and the safety plan that we have in place for those individuals to ensure their safety as well as our public safety.
Do you plan on sending an apology or retracting your letter?
Absolutely not.
They're accusing you of essentially lying.
There's nothing that's not true in my letter.
I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but I was interested, Jonathan, that you asked Cassie Franklin, "Do you have proof that the DOT is moving homeless people into Everett?" And her response is, "I do know that they have moved homeless people into the city." She didn't repeat your word, proof. She said, "I do know." And maybe I'm parsing this way too much, but did that jump out at you at all?
Yeah, it did. And I had a short amount of time. I was grabbing her, and she was gracious enough to give me a few minutes right before the start of the council meeting. So I wasn't able to really follow up. But we're just going to have to wait and see, because at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the proof, right? where is this proof? Who's right? Who's wrong? Who's making this up? Who's miscommunicating here? So that's something we're going to need from the mayor's office, that exact proof that I wanted to know, like, how many homeless people? Where exactly are these homeless people on these state right-of-ways being picked up from, allegedly, and which motels? The mayor would not say, and also WashDOT. I followed up with them this morning to see if they stood by their letter and if they wanted to respond to the mayor's most recent interview with me. And they're sticking to their letter, and they're also saying they don't have all of that information, right? I asked specifically, which motels, which areas in Everett? Because, again, in the letter, WashDOT admits they put at least three people from within city limits into Everett motels, but they wouldn't tell me exactly where. So the mayor and WashDOT planning to meet at the end of this month, mayor says, in a couple weeks, to kind of work this out and figure out where we go from here. But clearly, this is a controversy that's ongoing, and both sides not backing down.
Well, it sure also tells us how highly charged this issue is, because this is very unusual to have a mayor and a major state department publicly feuding with an exchange of letters instead of trying to work all of this behind the scenes. So, I mean, it does illustrate just how explosive an issue this it continues to be.
Yeah, and this is an extremely explosive and contentious issue. And what it shows ultimately, in my assessment, is that WashDOT really doesn't have a clear plan to address all these state right-of-ways. And right now, the biggest criticism is they're not doing it fast enough. Compare it to the city of Seattle. Despite what you want to say about the sweeps happening in Seattle and Mayor Bruce Harrell, they're doing it at a much faster pace than WashDOT. WashDOT, of course, has been pushing back, saying, well, that's why we don't want to sweep right away. We need to make sure the homeless actually have housing they're going to stay in. Well, guess what? There's no perfect situation. And that's why we're left with this. And Mayor Cassie is saying, I know what you guys are doing and not doing. So if you're going to try to push this homeless crisis into my backyard from other parts of the city, no way. Because she knows she can't rely on WashDOT.
And it certainly is not fair if WashDOT is doing that without talking to the community, because surrounding businesses, surrounding homeowners, they could expect to have crime problem rise. That's what's happened when homeless populations are housed in motels because they're still using drugs. They still need to commit almost daily crimes to buy their daily dose of drugs. And so, yeah, if this is happening without any engagement of the surrounding community, that's an absolutely unfair thing for the DOT to be doing.
And that's what the mayor is saying. At the very least, let's talk about a public safety plan, not only for the neighbors and business owners, but also for the homeless. The homeless are victims in many cases because they're being preyed upon by the drug dealers, the criminals, the sex traffickers. I've reported on this now for several years. So we know what the playbook is. We know what the consequences are going to be when you just allegedly dump a homeless community into these motels without any plan. And yet the policies continue to go down this road. And that's what Mayor Franklin says she's so frustrated about. She wants to, again, collaborate and work together. WashDOT says the same thing, but right now it's totally become a public war of words. WashDOT also saying in that letter that the mayor is trying to publicly shame the agency.
Yeah.
So it is definitely newsworthy, and it got my attention.
Well, it's great that you were able to catch up. And you know, as you said at the beginning, I'm surprised that more people aren't asking questions of the Everett mayor and DOT. But I'm glad you are, Jonathan. I always appreciate you sharing all of this with my listeners.
Hey, thanks again for amplifying the story. It's an ongoing story, so let's see what happens.
Yeah, we'll stay in touch. And again, you can see Jonathan's work on Twitter at Cho Show, C-H-O-E, Cho Show, and then also at fixhomelessness.org. Great stuff, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dory. Take care.
All right, we'll stay in touch. I'd love to hear your thoughts on all of this. You can text me, 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. So we're talking about what happens when bad guys have guns. And the murder at Ingram High School yesterday is a perfect example of that. A 14-year-old is the suspect. There are no laws beyond the ones that are already in place that could have gotten that gun out of the hands of that 14-year-old. I got a bunch of text messages, and people said, what if we just got rid of all guns? And I just, the fantasy land the people who ask that question are in, is it's shockingly delusional. I mentioned this yesterday. We have 300 million guns in America. If you could wave a magic wand and make all 300 million guns magically disappear, then maybe you could have that conversation. But short of that, and actually you couldn't because we have a Second Amendment as well. But I'm just talking about, look, if the Second Amendment wasn't there, you'd still have criminals with guns, and the good guys would not. And we're seeing that more and more good guys are making sure that they are armed. I know a lot of people who will not go into Seattle unless they are carrying. And I'll give you an example that's in the news right now. Fox 13 had this story. This is pretty shocking. Along Pacific Highway, down in Pierce County and elsewhere, some car dealerships say there has been such a shocking number of cars and catalytic converters stolen that they need to protect themselves. And they say, you wouldn't know it, but about 90% of the car lot employees are now armed. And one place that went on the record, Max Autos Plus, talked to Fox 13. And Jim Steele is their sales manager, and he says that their business has been targeted a lot by thieves.
Came in, scoped out the car, cut the locks on the gates. They ended up, busting out the window, jumping in the car and taking off.
And the types of theft?
Stolen cars, catalytic converters, even radios.
So Fox 13 asked, so how many of your employees are armed?
Well, he didn't feel comfortable telling us if and how many of them are armed. He says they're doing their part working with police.
Police are so inundated with these kind of things that the majority of time, by the time that we can get someone down here, we kind of start looking around. We have a really close-knit community and try to kind of track our own cars down.
There is such a shocking number of car thefts in our region. We've become number one in the country thanks to the Democrats in Olympia and the law that they passed a year and a half ago. It says police can't chase 95% of the car thieves. And so the car thieves know that. And so we've become number one in the country for auto thefts. And so, yes, of course, people are going to protect themselves. They're going to protect their business. And they talked about one of their cars has had a catalytic converter stolen three times, and they have to keep replacing it because otherwise they cannot legally sell the car.
Jim says they found some of their stolen cars in Seattle, Auburn 5, even as far away as Eastern Washington. But it's just a shop. The car chopped up and sold in parts.
Most small businesses cannot absorb this, and the craziness is going to continue because we have done nothing to reverse, at the polls at least, to reverse the shocking crime wave that has hit our region. Okay, quick timeout. We'll check the news for you here at the top of the hour. And then the Fastest 15 is coming up next.